once a month or once every 6 weeks, I try to do a series called World Today, where I'll look at a world topic, something going on in the news, either this week, or more recently, and try to talk about it. And we've talked about the refugees before. We've talked about North Korea. And this week, slightly different. I'm not talking about a major. I was tempted to talk about the junior doctor's pay, but then I realized, no, just pay them. So there, I thought that'd be a really short sermon. I don't know what I can say about that. So instead, this will be slightly less dramatic in terms of news events. But did anyone in your social media profiles? Don't worry, this is not about the Kardashians. See this picture show up, Ed. Did anyone see this? Do you see anything interesting about this? It's like spot the difference. See anything interesting about this picture? What do you see? That's right. No ethnic minorities. Oh no, sorry. just kidding. What you notice something about this very hip lady wearing her hipster glasses? She has no mobile device. And I didn't do the research to find out what they were taking a photo of or what was going on. But this picture started making the social media circles because they're like, look at this old lady. She's the only one who's living in the moment. And she became, it's ironic because then she became a minor internet sensation. And like the woman who doesn't have a smartphone. It is kind of funny because everyone's there with their hands, like, taking a photo of something, except for this guy who's Instagramming it. He's already sending it off because he was faster. And there's this idea of actually, in our modern-day society, are we getting more distracted? Are we getting more... And it's funny because we're supposed to be getting more connected, but at the same time, are we really more connected or more disconnected from what's actually happening? And it's such a tough kind of question because at the same time, there's some amazing conveniences that we get from these mobile devices. There's this artist or photographer Eric Pickersgill, and he put together this series of photos, which I've taken some to show you. And his was his. So he had this revelation one night as he was lying in bed holding his phone. Okay, so you know sometimes what people do is lie in bed and hold their phone and read something, and then as you're holding it, suddenly you fall asleep, right? And your phone goes dunk on the floor. And he had this revelation because he was doing that and his phone dropped the floor. And before he reached down to get his phone, he looked at his hand and he thought, oh, this is a photo series waiting to happen. And so he put together a photo series of people without their digital devices but kind of holding them. And this is what you look like. And it's funny because it's very like revealing, isn't it? This is what you look like when you're using your device. And you know, because you've all been there, sitting across from someone taking a photo of their food, and you see what they look like. They look like this. Which is a far cry, because I think for a lot of us, you know, 15 years ago, no one took photos that way. Everyone would take photos like this, and they'd walk like this, and do this. But nowadays, everyone does it like this, or like this. So he has this series, and I think it's really interesting because we kind of make fun of this, but actually when kids get together nowadays, this is really what it's like. They're all on their own kind of devices, and they will, especially at this age range, they'll just be playing their games, but they'll still be socializing. They'll be talking about it. At the same time, they'll be caught up in their moment. I've hanging out with the youth group a lot of times. You see them, and there'll always be someone trying on their phone, and it's like, to protect them from social interaction in some sense. I think we used to joke about this, like, what do you do at a bus stop when you're just waiting around for something? 20 years ago, if you had the newspaper or you read the Metro, you would pull that out and you would look at it. Nowadays, everyone just takes out their phone. There's a guy who makes his living by picking off coins off the street of New York City. So he would walk around the streets of New York City, and he says, oh, it's been really good now because I make so much more money walking around the streets. And they're like, oh, why do you make more money? He's like, because everyone's so busy looking at their phones when they're walking, they don't notice the coins on the floor. And I was like, this is unbelievable. But he was genuinely thrilled because he's like, yeah, I find so much stuff. Here's another photo. By the way, these are he staged these because he thought it would be weird to Photoshop them out. But at the same time, this is also, you can see this exactly same thing happening, right? So they just got married. They put some photos up. So what do? They go to their Facebook and see who else have put up their photos of their wedding and are looking at that now. Here's another one. Family time at the dinner. Probably don't know what they're doing. Here's another one. It's so common, right? You're just sitting around. You're just each looking at your phone. And you don't know what's happening. Is someone playing Clash of Clans? Is someone reading an article? You just don't know. There's this thing about distraction where it takes us out of the moment. And on one hand, it's trying to make us feel like we're more connected or we're doing more things. But actually, it's not. In fact, it's very dangerous. I mean, distraction can actually have a lot of consequences. And I think car driving is one of the big things. I think they're really trying to crack down on people who are texting and driving. And it's always the scariest because I see someone in a massive SUV and I think, oh no, if my wife is driving here in her tiny little Honda, she'll die if that car swerves over. Because they're like, you can tell they're not on their GPS. And I've seen someone, other things you've seen, I think in the past it used to be like people putting on makeup in their car. I think I heard about one guy trying to shave while driving, which I think that's definitely like death about to happen. I saw someone reading, I think he was probably studying for an exam because it was a big binder, and they're like reading and flipping through pages. And I was like, oh my goodness. And this is funny because this is at like 70 miles per hour on the motorway, right? And you're like, okay. We're all waiting for Tesla to hurry up with their automated self-driving cars so that we can actually do this in leisure and luxury. But the other question that we have is, are we more connected now or more disconnected? And instead of making this just about my thoughts of it, I thought it'd be really fun, and I thought it'd be really interesting to have you guys ask each other that now. Are we more connected now or less connected in current time? So I'm going to give you like 1 minute and 30 seconds to talk to the person next to you about this. Are we more connected now or less? Say hello to the person next to you. Greetings. Odd, this did not happen. All right, let's do this the easy way. We'll do this via a poll. Let's just take a poll. Who thinks that we're more connected now? Raise your hands. More connected. That's very interesting. How many people think we're less connected? What are the rest of you guys doing? Waffling, on the fence, kind of in between. Both. You think we're more connected and less connected. How is that possible? Okay, so you feel like you can be in more contact with people, but not a deep connection. Interesting. In other words, that's why you can know so many people, but you can still be single. Okay. Right, that's a real problem for a lot of, 25 to 35s. Like, I don't know why I have so many friends. So I'm still single. I don't know what happened. Yeah. Trace? Yeah, we're more connected when we have dialogue like this, right? And it's interesting because when you can kind of engage with people like this, it's much more connected. But at the same time, for those people who think we're less connected, how many people Skype your family members? Or like call them or FaceTime them, right? And it's like, but actually, do you remember the days when you had to write a letter? And you had to wait 3 weeks before they would receive it because they're overseas? And then you would not know what happened? Do you remember the days when you'd have to get on a boat for like 3 years before you get to the other side, and then you would never talk to your family for like another 25 years until they invented it. Yeah, exactly, right. So that's the thing. So those are the dates. So in some ways, there's some better connection, but at the same time, you start saying, well, maybe the quality of connection isn't as there because you have so many connections now, and that's what you mean. And that's still the same problem. It's, my point is a true point. That's why still people find it difficult to find someone to go out with. Anyways, the other part about connections and all this technology is, do you find that we can become more distracted from things? Yeah, so how many people think we are more easily distracted nowadays? It's those young people that they always more distracted. It was always better in my day. Okay, does anyone think that we are less distracted nowadays? That we're more focused as a people? No, right? Now, the question is, why are we more distracted? Is it just because we have more digital devices? More access to things? It's actually interesting because I think one of the reasons we're more distracted now is actually we have more freedom. And there's more choice out there. There's so much choice out there that it's hard to ever invest fully in one thing. Because there's a possibility that someplace else might be better. Or something else might be better than what you've got at this moment. And that's a really dangerous thing. And that's one of the things that we find. Actually, you know what? We bring that into our relationship with God. Now, it's funny because I think before, you know, back in the day when there was no television, no nothing. And I'm not saying we go back to those days, except for some television programs. Not saying we go back to those times. But there was a time when there wasn't very much. And so all you had was nature and trying to stay alive. But in that process, as you are out in nature and you see these things, you begin to question or begin to appreciate or engage with God a lot more. In fact, they say in the studies, people who spend more time in nature find that they have a greater appreciation of the supernatural or that they have a greater belief in God because they are out in nature more. And this is not just among religious people. This is among scientists and all sorts of people. But the more time they spend outside with nature, the more they are in awe of it. There's this thing about being distracted from God, which I think maybe we don't think so much about, because we find I find it really hard to hear from God. Oh, I don't feel Him. I don't know where He is. Oh, I don't know. I don't have a connection with God. And those are the common complaints people say. Like, oh, and then the arguments come from the other side. It's like, oh, how can you believe in God? Do you know Him? Have you seen Him? And then when we come back and say, well, yeah, actually, I don't know. I'm not sure those connections are there. See, the real problem with distraction, and Tim Challies writes this great book called The Next Story, Faith, Friends, and Family. Tim Challies, yeah. So he says distraction, or living in a distracted culture, leads to shallow thinking and into shallow living. And part of it is because you spend so much time looking at so many different things that you don't end up developing or working deeper into these kind of ideas. Now, it's not that it's not possible to do that, but only if you start focusing on certain things or really start digging into it can you start moving past the shallow into something deeper. And we talked about that from the beginning with connections. We might have more connections now, but are those more distractions or are they actually deeper, meaningful connections? Now, on a friend level, that's already an issue, but you bring that into the family, that's an even bigger problem. When your family members are distracted from one another and you don't invest in those relationships and you kind of outsource everything. We've outsourced education. We outsource the time we spend with them. In fact, we are so busy and distracted with our own things that we find, well, actually, time has gone by. We don't know our kids. We don't know our parents. And we don't have those connections. See, with all these distractions, what we end up doing is reducing God. And what I mean by reducing God is, and I'll give you an example of this. I don't know the facts exactly. But in other words, it was either my brother-in-law or my sister's ex-boyfriend. So there's a big difference between the two of those. But now I've said it. Okay, anyways. So one of those guys... Because they're both artists, and they're both really... So I got to tell you, I do have to throw in the story about my sister's ex-boyfriend was like this crazy, like, artist guy, like, proper artist. But we didn't really like him because he was really arrogant and pretentious, like, super. Like, he's in the end, he became an architect. That's how pretentious he was. I'm sorry, I love architects and I love architecture. That is, like, my dream thing, but I also know a lot of them. Okay, This ex-boyfriend, he drew a profile of my sister's face, probably about as big as this wall, from memory, like, and it was massive. And my parents put it up on the wall. I was like, it's kind of surreal, my sister's side of her face, like, and it was really good. And then my sister friend also didn't like him, but so he sent her this giant. It's like a huge mural, probably the length of this wall. It was like a Jackson Pollock, but he also did things like where he burnt parts of it, and then they got it and they unrolled it and took up like the whole room. And they unrolled it, and then my friend said, You should tell the post office, Grace. They messed up this painting so badly. Look, there are burn marks in it. But he was so... So it was either him or my brother-in-law, who is a wonderful guy. And he said this. He was talking about art. And he's talking about art galleries. And he's saying, I really don't like art galleries. And I'm like, well, why do you like art galleries? You have all the art there. You can look at it. And he says, because when you have all the art in one room together, you don't appreciate it. Actually, if you've been to an art gallery and you don't know what you're looking at, it's still like you just go from one painting to another. Like, okay, that's another one. Well, how many sheep could these people draw? Like, okay, here's another. Okay, here's another people of a mural of people getting killed, and here's another one, and it starts becoming all blurring in one. And this, it must have been my sister's ex-boyfriend because he's so passionate. All paintings should be on their own in like the lobby of a hotel or in some office building, so that they can be appreciated and seen in their own kind of glory almost. And I thought, there's a lot of sense to that, actually. When you see a painting on its own, separate from something else, you have a chance to actually look at it, engage with it, and appreciate it. I think another good example of this is music. I think so many of us listen to music in the background now, right? I mean, my generation, even, you would listen to music while you work, and no matter how many times my parents said, you can't listen to music in work, you can't focus, you say, no, I can only focus if I have music on. And you grow older, then it doesn't make any sense. But what you found is actually when you actually sit down and listen to music and you appreciate it and you pay attention to it, you discover actually there is so much more in there. But because we put so much in the background and we're so used to it just kind of being on the side, you don't end up appreciating it. And I think that also then explains why the quality of music has kind of shifted, right? Because you don't need so much depth, so much intricacy. I've been trying to listen to a little bit more Bach lately. And as you hear it, and if you sit there and you listen, and then you feel like, oh, I feel like crying, but I don't know why. Because there's something rich in that. There's some depth in there. And even in that moment, for your emotional depth to be touched. Even when we talk about film, and you talk about great films, when you actually sit there and you can analyze it and go deep into it, you say, well, this is what separates this from something else. Our problem is we reduce God from God down to the same category as everything else. And we put him alongside the rest of our world, and we say, well, okay, well, maybe that's it, right? You know, oh, God, you know, help me deal with my work, or God, help me in my life. And he gets reduced down to this small thing. And when we're more distracted, it's hard to actually sit down and say, actually, I really want to focus on God. Even if I say that now, if I say focus on God, I didn't know what that means. What does it mean to really focus on God? Even if you pull out your Bible, and it's bad now, you pull out your Bible on your app, you look at your Bible app for 30 seconds, and then you like tap to another app where a notification comes down. I say, someone liked my photo. Let me just go have a look. Oh, yes, a like. Okay, and let's go back to the Bible. In other words, everything's just been reduced. Now there's a difference because you know that psalm that we start off today with focus, the Psalm 27:4, and there's this thing. It says, "One thing have I asked of the Lord that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple." Like this is the thing. One thing have I asked. You know, this is the one thing I will seek. Okay, like, I can't remember the last time I really pursued something with that singular desire, that one thing, without my mind being distracted by something else. You know, when you stop and try to think, you realize, well, actually, I'm distracted so often. When I'm talking to someone, actually, my mind wanders. I hate watching movies now because I'm watching the movie and I'm thinking about something else. I feel like, oh, this movie's gone so slow. Hurry up and get to Isendorf already. It's Hobbits. And you just, I can't struggle to focus. Try to really say, actually, but when you look at these psalmists and when they're writing, they're saying, you look, there's one thing above everything else that I seek. And I want to be with you, God. I want to dwell in your house. That singular passion. It feels very much like that's something we need to be getting back to. that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Now, see, this is interesting because one time when we think dwell in the house of the Lord, he's saying, oh, God, I just want to, one thing I want to do is I want to just die and go to you in heaven and dwell with you there. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying, one thing have I asked the Lord that I will seek after, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. While I'm here on earth, every day, I want to be with you in your house, in your presence. I want to be in your presence every day. That's the one desire I have. Now in my head, I'm like, how can you get nothing done? The clothes will be dirty. The food won't be cooked. How can you have one thing? Because there's this thing where, again, where we reduce God into our life, into our lifestyle. But this is different. He's saying, look, I know if I pursue this one thing, if I pursue you, if you are what I seek, everything else will probably be okay. And that's a flip for us, isn't it? Because for us, it's normally like, okay, if I have this, if I get my job, or if I can be settled in my career, or if I can just get through university, or if I just get through this tough week, you know, then I'll be okay. I just got to get through this, and then I'll be okay. And then in our back of our heads, we're like, yeah, I just trust God. I pray, God, you just help me get through this. But God's the flip way. He's saying, look, one thing, you look at me, trust me, really desire me, and all this other stuff, I will be there with you. How do you know that? Because if you were dwelling in the house of the Lord all the days of your life here on, it doesn't mean that suddenly you've moved off to some McMansion somewhere hiding off. It's actually that, God, I know that I dwell with you here and now. So everywhere I go, the kingdom of God is with me. In my workplace, with my family, the kingdom of God is, because I'm with you. That shifts the way you interact and start dealing with people. Everything changes. That's why there's that strength in this. To gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Again, that's the thing saying, actually, when things come up, I go and I just inquire. I just ask God, God, what do I do? But I'm cool with that because I've been with you the whole time and my focus and my heart still remain with you. See, the problem with us is we find that we actually have no space for God. And I'm not talking about physical space, although in this circumstance in our church, yes, I'm talking about physical space. But I'm actually talking about emotional or mental or even spiritual space, the place for our soul to really be at rest with God, for our emotions to be given to him, whether it's in turmoil or in peace. It's saying, well, I'm going to give it to you, or your mind. It's saying, actually, God, I've kind of forced you out because there's so many distractions nowadays, aren't there? There's so much pressure. And you know, when I was younger, you think the only pressure is like the exam next week. And you get older, it feels like the next 5-10 years of your life are already booked up with things. And it feels so like I have no space for God. In fact, I don't have space for myself. When am I ever going to find, Bert, come on, seriously? When am I going to find like even 20 minutes to really sit down by myself and focus on God? I don't think I can't do that. Even if I sit down for 20 minutes, I'm either too tired or I just can't focus. I just need to unwind. How is this going to happen? See, there's so much noise in our life that, again, we're trying to squeeze God into places where we are. And again, that's reducing him into our lifestyle. But the flip side really needs to be, okay, God, maybe the way that I'm doing life is not right. One, because I have no peace, right? Basically, I feel like I run around like a headless chicken all the time, right? Or I'm not rest. You know, my life is not full of joy. It just feels frustration or disappointment. I feel so much pressure, right? There's all these kind of things. Actually, maybe the flip side is saying, God, okay, you know, I have been doing this all wrong. God, I want to dwell in your kingdom. Psalm 119, and Psalm 119 is all about the law. It's all about God's word and how beautiful it is, and it's the longest psalm in the Bible, and this is part of it. With my whole heart I cry, answer me, O Lord. I will keep your statutes. I call to you, save me, that I may observe your testimonies. I rise before dawn and cry for help. I hope in your words. My eyes are awake before the watch of the night, that I may meditate on your promise. And there's two things that really shine out from this. One is, my whole heart I cry out. This is what I want most, that I will keep in your laws. In other words, I will walk according to your way. I'm crying out for that. And that's what it means to kind of dwell in the house, right? The second part is my eyes are awake before the watch of the night, that I may meditate on your promise. In fact, this is so important. This person's like, I'm getting up early because I believe that this shifts everything else in my life. I want to revolve my schedule around you, my life around you. Now, when I read that, the first thing that I feel is guilt. I'm a bad Christian because I don't wake up early to read my Bible, even though I've heard many preachers preach on it. I hear that Martin Luther used to say, if I have so many things to do in the day, I wake up an extra 4 hours early so that I can pray. And I think, I'm just a bad Christian then, right? Because I don't love God that way. But it's actually not the guilt that's the problem. The problem is the desire. And I think that's what convicts me, is that I actually just don't want God that much, right? You know, if you really want God. But then the question is, why don't I want God as much? The reason I don't want God as much is because I don't need him as much. Because I'm functioning. I'm a functioning adult. You can get through my day all right. I can survive, right? I generally don't need him. I can do it myself. At the same time, you spend so much of your life not satisfied, stressed out. These are all these warning signs, right? Distractions that fail to keep you distracted from the fact that actually we've got it all kind of wrong. And that's why we don't hear from him, or that's why we don't engage with him. And that's why it doesn't feel like we're walking in the right direction. It just feels like we're in a battle all the time, in a slog. Maybe the shift is saying, actually, God, you know what? I do need you. I admit, actually, I need you more than I thought. It's hard, because so much of us, we want to demonstrate to the world that I can do this myself, that I'm strong enough. And God is saying, well, maybe you can't. Maybe you need me. The other part is, when there's so much pressure, there's so much work to get done, it's like, I got to be efficient. I got to get through all this stuff. And I was a big fan of efficiency. That's why I love Singapore. I'm a big fan of efficiency. But I find that if we're, and Alice Chow actually told me, you know, maybe being efficient is not the most important thing in your life. I thought, that's probably true. I didn't want to think about it because it wasted my time. But this idea of efficiency is like, well, I just want to get from one task so that I can get onto the next task, so that I can get onto the next task. So eventually, when I finish all those tasks that I can get done, I can think about what other tasks need to be done later to prepare myself for those future tasks. But I realized, if you are super efficient, maybe you are spiritually deficient. Now, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be efficient people, that we shouldn't work hard, that we shouldn't work right. But when that supersedes God, when you add God to the category of efficiency, then maybe we've got it wrong. Actually, I find mostly if you're super efficient, then maybe you're not focusing so much on where God is. That flip side is actually I know a lot of people who are super efficient, but the reason they're super efficient is because they place God centrally. And in the trusting of God, he then lays out and gives them the amount of time they need. Are we accomplishing more in our life at the expense of our relationship with God? This idea of actually, God, actually with my whole heart, I want to cry out to you. And I want to wake to meet with you. The number one cry of my heart is not that I finish my tasks faster, but it's actually that, God, I want to know you more. See, when you start looking at your life, and when I look at our, even trying to raise kids, I'm always wondering, what behaviors am I reinforcing? What am I doing in my life? Am I focusing on the supremacy of God or the supremacy of myself? In other words, am I doing it because I think I can do it? Or am I saying, actually, God, I want to look to you? And again, a lot of this is not about no longer reducing God down to this level, but actually saying, God, you are on a far higher level than us. And that's why I look to you for absolute sustenance. See, the reality of this is that it needs to be practiced. Your behaviors don't change overnight. You don't suddenly feel connected with God by reading the Bible once. If that happened, then you would never develop a behavior. Wouldn't know what it means to live in the walk in the house of the Lord. You'd just be like, oh, I'm really thirsty. I'm going to McDonald's and get a drink. Or I'm just going to press this button, vending machine. God will pop something out and I'll be happy. Then I'll just go on my life, live my own way. But God is not interested in that, right? He's interested in shaping your character and changing how you live, who you are deep with him. He's not just an instant fix. In fact, the more we're finding out about life is that actually it shouldn't be about instant fixes, but about actually learning how to live right. So actually when we start saying, well, let me change my behavior, saying, God, okay, well, let me discover what it means to follow you. There's this this monk who was actually interviewed. There's a few letters about him, and it's called Practicing the Principles. Ashley's spoken about him before. And this is, you can read this entire thing online if you want, because it's a public domain. But he was a fascinating guy, and they talk about him a lot because he said there's this thing called practicing the presence of God. And actually, when he says practicing, he actually means that by doing it over and over again, he learns how to always walk in the presence of God. And in practicing that, he always knows where God is. For us in this society, I feel like this is so key for us. Actually learning how to deal with our working situations, with our schooling situations, and saying, okay, well, God, let me be in this. One of the examples is, so he used to have to be sent into Burgundy to buy wine for the community. And he didn't like doing this because he was a bad business. He's like, he has no business sense whatsoever. So if you have no business sense, you have to go out and buy stuff. It's like a nightmare. It's like the worst thing. And also because he could not, he was lame. Not like, but like he couldn't walk very well. And so he had really difficulty going to the boat and then getting the casks back into the boat himself. So it was so much hard work for him. And so he wasn't comfortable. He was worried. And he's like, I ain't purchased this wine. And he said to God, look, God, I know this is what you've called me to do. This is the work you've given me. And as he focused on that, and he said, look, whenever he set out to that, he said, God, I know this is the task that you've assigned me. He found that he was able to do it. And this was the first kind of start where he started saying, look, maybe always being in the presence of God is more important than what job you're doing or how you're doing. He's saying, well, God, I know this is what you want me to do. And he started to grow in this. And so this is in kind of an interview, and this guy was asking him more questions about this. But for him, it was really about the supremacy of God being above everything else and saying, God, this is your work that you've assigned me. I trust you. God, this is your life you've given me. So I want to always be in your presence. And for us, then, if we're saying, well, let's learn, if we had to change our behavior, what would that mean? Let's learn what it means to kind of set up for the day. So in this is an excerpt. When he began his business, he said to God with a filial trust in him, oh, my God, since thou art with me, and I must now in obedience to thy commands. He actually was French. He's not spoken like that. Commands, apply my mind to these outward things. I beseech thee to grant me the grace to continue in thy presence. And to this end, do thou prosper me with thy assistance. Receive all my works and possess all my affections. As he proceeded in his work and he continued his familiar conversation with his maker, imploring his grace and offering to him all his actions. You guys understand what that said? You will understand what that says. Nancy would understand what that said. I had to translate it. So let me translate it for you. All right, this is basically his prayer, which was, God, you are with me. So now as I head forward with the tasks set before me today, grant me the grace to continue in your presence and guide or lead or bless me with your help. I offer all my works to you and I give you all my desires. So this is what he would do before he set out in the day. It's like, this is what I've got ahead of me. God, this is the work that you've done. And then he doesn't expect to say, now, God, you're sending me out to do this, but rather, God, I'm going to stop praying now, but you are with me. So continue to give me your presence throughout the day while I work on the work that you've given me. And give me the grace to continue in your presence. And then guide and lead me and bless me with your help. In other words, when I start to struggle or I start to have problems, God, you help me. and I look to you. And at the end, he says, and I give all of my work, all of this, I give this to you, and I give you all my desires. Now, that's a big deal, actually. Like, if you take this prayer and you put it into your context of current life and current work, it's actually saying, or your study, you're saying, look, God, today, I know this is what I have to do today. Okay, and I know that when I do this, I forget that you're there. But God, will you remind me? Will you let me be in your presence? I know you're there. God, come with me. And then the prayer goes, and give me the grace to always be in your presence. And guide and lead me and bless me when I need your help. And I think the way that happens is God begins to remind him, actually, you're struggling. Rest in me. Trust in me. Look to me. The second part is, I offer all my works to you and I give you my desires. Now, this is amazing because this says, okay, at the end of the day, God, if I've done well, you know, let my supervisor be blessed by that. At the same time, in my desire, yeah, maybe I feel like I should get an award or get a good mark on this test or get a promotion. But you know what? Can I give that all to you? I trust you with all of this too. Imagine if this is the way you lived your work day, every day. You would not come back feeling stressed as much or disappointed that they're not being acknowledged at work. You would know that each day you're heading out trusting that God has given you this situation, that he will continue guiding you through this. Suddenly your whole perspective is shifted from you and your responsibility to saying God is with me. And this is his responsibility that he's given me. This is the thing that you practice and you learn and you discover how to walk in this way, because it's difficult. Because you know that actually in this day and age you are bombarded more and more with more distractions and more notifications. That's hard to focus. And this is where you would learn. Further on, he would then say, when he had finished, he examined himself how he had discharged his duty. In other words, how well did he do? If he found he did well, he returned thanks to God. If otherwise, he asked pardon, and without being discouraged, he set his mind right again. And this is great because he's like, okay, if I did well, praise you, God. If he didn't, if he lost, he said, you know what, God? You know, forgive me. Let me try again tomorrow. If you look at this, he's saying, one thing I ask is to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. I want this. Every day, I'm looking to this. Whether it goes well or goes bad, tomorrow I'm still asking the same thing. Thus said he, by rising after my falls and by frequently renewing acts of faith and love, I am come to a state wherein it would be as difficult for me not to think of God as it was at first to accustom myself to it. In other words, over time, it's gotten to the point where he's like, I would have to train myself not to be in the presence of God. It would take that much work and practice to forget that God is with me. How awesome is that? Because when we talk about this church or people being alive for God and Christians really being alive for him, it's saying, well, God, I guess I have to be in your presence, be used to you so that I can hear you when you're telling me to go and speak to my coworker to bless them or how to deal with moral quandaries in the workplace. Instead of just trying to fiddle it about myself, God, I want to just be in your presence so that I can be that light to there. So many of us, when we're young and we jump into our work, we are expecting, yeah, I'm going to go in there and we're going to, you know, I'm going to pray for my coworkers every day when I go to work. And it's going to be great. And about 3 weeks into work, your job, you're like, this is impossible. I want to find a real job and do something that I can really bless God with. But actually, we're just out of practice. Same with school. Same with going to university. I just think, God, this is what you've given me. May I excel in it? May I give you this day? He said this other thing. True virtue is not found by getting a task finished quickly, but by getting it done and doing it well. Virtue comes in fulfilling God's mandate to do all things for his glory. I think that really resonates with what is written in Colossians. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Like, isn't that really rich? Isn't that really amazing? Actually saying whatever you're doing, whatever work has been assigned to you. And when he's writing this to the poorest slaves, to the richest freemen. He's saying, look, whatever you do, this work as if you're serving the Lord. And let that shift your perspective. The second part is actually trying to figure out, well, how do we end the day? How do we close the day off? Because after work, you want to come back. Normally, you just want to just unwind, not think about anything. And actually, one of the things that's really good is actually when you try some of these, cultivate concentration. Learn how to focus on things. And I don't mean you don't have to unwind and, you know, try to relax for a bit. But discovering, you know, well, maybe concentrate. Let me find a place to minimize distractions. Create sacred space. Digital-free zones. Trying to find a place to say, look, there's no digital devices in here. I just want to... It could be your toilet. And, you know, I know they're working better on waterproofing your phones. But saying, you know, look, actually, you know what? Whenever I go to the toilet, I'm not going to bring my phone in. I want to stay there and be free. That's not going in a good direction, whatever I'm going. The other part that I think is a little bit harder is... delete apps from your phone that you know are time wasters, things that you know are not Clash of Clans, not very helpful, not very good. The other part is also canceling subscriptions, saying like, yeah, I don't know about this Netflix account. Do I really need it? Do I waste more time watching these things? Or I had a friend who was even more strange, like they canceled their internet. I was like, oh my gosh, how are you still alive? But I had another friend who deleted all the apps off his phone. He said, "Because I don't want to, you know, it is becoming a problem for me." And by problem, it didn't mean he was like addicted to it all the time, but just like saying, "Well, it was too much of a distraction." The part is just saying time limits. And it's funny because when we talk about all these things, this whole shift into digital technology has happened so quickly. So for us as adults, we just jumped right into it. We got sucked into the same thing the teens are doing, but on a different level because we're not as clever. But we're not also setting good precedents for them. And I know this too, because there are times when I'm on my phone because I don't want to talk to my kids. And I'd rather read something and just read the same news I always read. But I can see myself, like those pictures. You know, I can see myself. I know I'm holding my phone. I know this is what it looks like to the kids. It's funny because the kids are quite actively playing on like with their Legos and whatever, but I'm just trying to ignore them. Part of me thinks like, gosh, that's really not being in the moment. That's not really not. In other words, I have shut God out. I'm not listening to him. I don't want to hear him. I want to do my own thing. I want to manage my own life. I think I'm better than him. Whereas if I stopped and said, actually, God, in my home, this family is the work you've given me. Let me do this for your glory. Let me be in your presence all the time. Do you think that would shift families a bit? Do you think that would help families a lot? I have a feeling it would. Even if you're the only child in the family who's a Christian, if you say, God, I want to practice the presence of God here in my idol-worshipping family every day, I know you are here with me. That's the one thing I ask. You know what? God begins to just spread that, his kingdom, throughout the whole house, throughout the whole family. You bring that attitude into work, he begins to spread his kingdom out throughout your workplace, throughout your peers. You bring that into your schools, he begins to spread that out through your schools. And you realize, oh, actually, maybe learning how to actually walk with God is one of his methods to transforming the society around us. Maybe it's not all about super fast protest or change or one magical vote that's going to change it into something amazing, but maybe it's, God, let me practice your presence everywhere and bless and share and bring that out, and we bring that transformation out. Kind of end with, and I've been doing this, it's just kind of ending with a prayer that I wrote, and it's for myself, but also for you guys can see. Dear God, I'm sorry that I'm so distracted. I struggle to focus, to hear you, to pray, to follow you. Lord, forgive me. I set my heart before you again. I cry out for you. I yearn to dwell in your house. I eagerly sit at your feet and listen. Teach me, O Lord. Amen. As we are going to come to a time of communion, I just invite you actually to use this as your prayer. Just kind of prepare your hearts and say, God, actually, let me refocus again. Let me say, God, you are supreme, and I am honored to be with you. So let's just take a few minutes just to pause and to be still before God. And just pray either this prayer or prayer from your own heart to him. Let's come and be still before the Lord for a bit.